Mr. Leffler?
Yes, sir.
Good morning to you. You may approach. Ms. Klein, are you on WebEx?
Yes, Your Honor, I am.
We do not see you visually. At this point, we can hear you.
Okay, is that better?
Now we see you visually.
Okay.
Do either counsel have any questions before we begin?
No, Your Honor, thank you.
Thank you very much. Mr. Leffler, you may proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, my name is Kurt Leffler and I represent Mr. John Bryant. And Mr. Bryant was released from jail about 2 weeks ago and see who he is able to attend court with me today. I would ask to reserve about a minute and a half of time, if I may. Justices, this case comes before the court on what is essentially three spoken statements over the telephone. Statement number one, these two statements were made in one conversation over a phone. And the third statement was made about 7 minutes later on a new phone call, right? And the statement, they may be offensive, they may be appropriate, but the issue is whether or not the statements constitute a violation of law. And the statements were that he believed that Judge Kubi deserved a bullet. And in a conversation he had with an NDHHS worker, he also said that a county attorney, deputy county attorney, deserved a bullet. And in talking to the caseworker, he made a third statement, and all these statements were to the caseworker, something about she was next on his list for a bullet.
Is it correct that for the appellant to be successful in his appeal, this court would necessarily need to find the jury was unreasonable when it found that the final statement, fine, take my kids, see yourself next on my list for a bullet, and I removed the offensive word from that quote, was actually a threat?
Well, Judge, I don't think you have to find that they were unreasonable. I think you just have to find that there's a clearly erroneous standard. In fact, the court decided on a decision on that yesterday. But also, Judge, the issue here before the court that we've, as the way that we pled it, is that insufficiency of evidence. And so, Judge, when we look at that particular, the allegations that are made, and we look at it, and I'm going to look first at the, if I may, at the language of a terroristic threat, because that's the more serious of
I want to get back to Sandra real quick before you move on.
Oh, yes, sir.
Isn't this viewed in the light most favorable to the prosecution at this point?
Okay. This is, if I can read it, I haven't memorized it, but again, this is what it was handed down just yesterday, but it's the standard language. It says, under a clearly erroneous standard of review, an appellate court does not reweigh the evidence but considers the judgment in the light most favorable to the successful party, resolving evidentiary conflicts in favor of the successful party who is entitled to every reasonable effort deducible from the evidence.
Do they have a court of appeals opinion?
That is the case of the state of Nebraska versus Kevin J. Young, and that was returned yesterday. 821-244. So court of appeals.
Thank you,
Judge. So
why are these statements not a threat?
And that is the key, Judge.
Is it because he's on the telephone?
Nope.
He's not in their location. What's the basis for it?
Okay. Judge, if I could give like about just 15 seconds of foundation and then answer your question. Okay. There have been approximately 70 cases that this court has heard and the Court of Appeals has heard concerning the words terroristic threat. Now, under State versus Curlisle, this court held that whether particular conduct constitutes a threat depends on the context of the interaction between the people involved. So that context of that interaction, when we look at those very 70 cases, they can be really placed into three analytical buckets, okay? Analytical bucket number one is what I would call an acts-only case, and that's not this. The biggest bucket.
Hold it. What did you call it? Acts? A-X?
Oh. No, analytical bucket.
Oh, so what's the first
act? A-C-T.
Oh, act.
where a person commits an act but doesn't say anything. And that's kind of a small bucket.
That's the waving of the gun, but no statement.
Yes, Judge. Okay, the second one is by far the biggest, and that one is where we have some kind of act that's associated with words. The third statement, or the third kind, are the words only. Now, to be totally candid up front, this court did not find for the defendant in any one of those cases. So, and I've been important, you know that, all right? Now, it is the words combined with the act, as set forth in Carlyle, that interaction between the people, I said act, I meant the interaction. It is that interaction that indicates what's going on. So we have to look not only at the words themselves, we have to look at the interaction between Ms. Kelsey Baker and Mr. John Bryant. Okay, now.
I beg your pardon. With respect to your comment on context, could you advise the court, do you mean the defendant and a potential victim, or the defendant saying words only to not the potential victim?
Well, in this case, it would be to the potential defendant, or the victim, rather.
So the terroristic threat we're talking about right now is to the Health and Human Services worker.
Yes, Judge.
Right. Not a statement that Judge Kubi deserved a bullet.
Correct.
Okay. So you're talking about you should be next. That's that sort of statement.
It's the next. Yeah, you're next on my list. Okay. Now, when we look and getting more specifically into your comment. Now, when we take those two analytical buckets and we put them together and we look at the words used always have a certain characteristic. They are very direct. I'm going to take, we look at Graves. I'm going to take an AK-47 and shoot you up. Okay. I'm going to kill you. All of these words were very direct. Okay, the statement here we have is more obtuse. And so to present that as a threat, we have to look at the interaction between these two people. Now, in this interaction, there's only a handful of cases that are words only. There just aren't. So I don't have, I can make some comparisons, but I can't give you a bottom end on what would constitute the threat because this court hasn't established one yet. Okay. But.
So under your approach to this, to quote a rather famous phrase from a movie, I'm going to make you an offer you can't refuse. That could never be a threat punishable by the criminal law.
Well, it depends on the interaction.
The context matters.
Context is king. Okay.
So how does all of this interact with the First Amendment?
Okay. There comes a point where people are punished for the words that they use and they lack the appropriate interaction. Okay. And I'm not trying to be flippant at all, Your Honor, but given the current state of affairs, political affairs in the United States, if everybody who said a certain political candidate deserved a bullet and the people and they were imprisoned, and the people who were in prison said, no, I prefer this candidate, our jails would be full.
There's a difference, though, isn't there, between someone saying in conversation some inflammatory statement about a public political figure and saying something directly to the victim. And this just goes to your point about context, right?
And it goes to context.
But how does that help your client here?
Because the context is entirely lacking. You see, Judge, when you look at the relationships between the parties, here's what we have. Okay. My client had never met her before in her entire life. And that is set out. She testified to the same thing. She did not know him. He did not know her. He did not know that she was pregnant. Couldn't pick her out of a lineup. Okay. And so the first interaction they had is quite frankly, is disputed. Okay. We introduced to court a telephone message that she alleged that she left, played it for the jury. And so the first time that my client says that he knew about her was he got a phone message later in the day. And in that phone message, he said, or she said, hey, you know, please call me. I have this pickup order. So he's in North Platte. He makes contact with her. Now they're driving through rural Nebraska, so they get cut off. And so they're talking about the particular case. There's no question he's venting, and Ms. Baker testified that she said it was okay to vent. And so he's talking about this case because they have a pickup order for his children. Okay. So he's referencing a case that Judge Kubi decided, and he's venting by saying, okay, may I continue to answer?
You may finish your thought.
Thank you. And so what we are entirely lacking is the specificity of the threat, the lengthy period of communications and knowledge that the people have of each other. Like, for example, Graves versus Grave, they fought for years, right? And I could go through the other cases where, the shorter the relationship, the more pointed the threat has to be. And so these parties simply do not have the history. They don't have the relationship. They don't have the background, and Mr. Bryant did not have the intent to terrorize her. And that is the key. And I don't believe that that can actually, if we actually look at the words and we say the words themselves constitute the threat without any more than just those three sentences, then what we almost have is a case of per se. And that kind of answers your question also, Your Honor. What we have in essence is a case of per se terroristic cut. So all you have to do is say the wrong words and boom, the interaction between the parties no longer matters. And that interaction between the parties is king. And what we don't have is any evidence adduced to trial that shows that Mr. Bryant had anything involved with her other than those three sentences. Any other questions, Your Honor?
Thank you very much. Ms. Klein, good morning to you. You may proceed.
Court, I'm Kimberly Klein, Assistant Attorney General representing the state in this matter. Your Honors, the evidence is clearly sufficient to support all three convictions. Whether or not they know each other is frankly irrelevant to the analysis. The context of this entire situation is one in which Backer is a member of Health and Human Services who has been given a pickup order for the defendant's children, three of which were with him, three of which were with his ex-wife. And it was that context that basically drove the defendant to an almost irrational state of anger, in which in one phone call he threatened to shoot Judge Kubi and threatened to shoot the prosecutor in that case, and in a phone call about 10 minutes later called back, he called her. I think that's somewhat interesting to note. He called her and told her, go ahead and take my kids, but consider yourself next on my list for a bullet. I don't know in what context that would not be considered a threat. Yes, she told him to go ahead and vent, but there's venting, and then there is threatening to shoot someone, and I think those are entirely separate things. And under these circumstances, the threats to shoot both the worker, the judge, and the prosecutor constitute terroristic threats. They constitute third degree assault, and they also constitute intimidation by phone call. I can't envision a circumstance in which somebody who's the recipient of a statement, consider yourself next on my list for a bullet, would not consider that to be a direct threat to themselves.
I beg your pardon. I was trying to explore threats to others. How does that fit into the analysis?
The threats to others, I think the way the language of the three statutes is written, the threat to the others, a threat to any one of the three would suffice for both the third degree assault, because it requires intentionally, knowingly, or recklessly threatens another in a menacing manner. It doesn't have to be directed apparently to the person to whom you are speaking. And basically the same is true with intimidation by phone call. I think the terroristic threats is a bit more specific, because it requires a threat to commit any crime of violence with the intent to terrorize another, or in reckless disregard of causing such terror or evacuation. I think you could probably stretch that language to encompass a threat to another person, even though it was made to Backer. I think the threats to shoot the judge and the prosecutor might suffice under those circumstances. But I think the fact that he made a second phone call and threatened her specifically, that I think is absolutely a deadlock on the terroristic threats. And it clearly terrified her. It terrified her to the point that she was so upset she's throwing up in somebody's front yard.
I beg your pardon. Yeah, I'm trying to come back to the statute and see if there are some distinctions that matter in conveying, let's call them threats, right, directly to the potential victim under each of these counts, or simply to a third party. I don't minimize the content. I'm just trying to analytically get us to the statute. So the threat to another could be conveyed to not the victim or the other. Who's in another and who's in other? Thank you.
Under these circumstances, I think the other or another could be any one of the three who were threatened in this particular case. The threats were basically, if you will, funneled through Kelsey Backer, but the threats were made against, at various points, all three of them. And I think particularly under the third degree assault and the intimidation by phone call, I think particularly those two, I think, are by the statutory language clearly can be made basically via a third party, if you will. And I think the terroristic threats probably can be as well. But I think under this circumstance, it's because there is basically a separate threat made directly to Backer, I think it is a deadlock cinch on the threat to her. And I think particularly under the standard of review that we have in cases such as this, I think essentially when viewing the evidence in the light most favorable to the state, any rational trier of fact could have and, in fact, did find the essential elements of all three crimes beyond a reasonable doubt. That is an awfully tough standard to overcome, and, frankly, he doesn't come anywhere near it under the facts of this case. And so unless there are other questions, we would ask that the judgments and convictions be affirmed in this case. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Do we have any time for rebuttal? There is no time for rebuttal. Counsel, thank you very much. That concludes arguments on State versus Bryant, and you are excused. The court will go on to the next case of the day, which is State ex rel Counsel for Discipline versus Nelson. You may approach, but let's give everybody a moment to get in and out of the courtroom.